The views expressed in this program are not necessarily those of FMR. Fine Music Radio. Book Choice with Paige Nick on FMR.
Hello and welcome to Book Choice on Fine Music Radio. And we're sliding right into the end of October right now, which means we're basically at the end of November, which means we're basically at the end of the year. And that means one very big thing. It means we might just be going on holiday soon. So if you're anything like me, you're starting to think about what you're going to put on your reading pile, what you want to read over the summer holidays or during your break or during next to a pool on a Saturday. And that's why this show this month is so important, because we're bringing you a whole stack of books that you can choose from, maybe to gift somebody in your life. I mean, it's the very best gift you can ever give. It opens up a whole new world, or just to gift yourself because you're worth it. So we have this incredible show. My name is Paige Nick. You're tuned into Fine Music Radio. This is Book Choice. Our show is sponsored by Exclusive Books, and we love working with them so much because it's a match made in heaven. We have a jam-cram-packed show for you today. We're going to start off with Vanessa Levenstein, who's chatting about a Jane Austen retrospective to celebrate Jane Austen's 250th birthday, which is coming up in December. After that, Beverly Rose Miller is here, and she's chatting about the latest Richard Osman, which is just such a big crowd-pleaser. Then Riley Herbert Henry is here, chatting about something local, Hell of a Country by David Cornwell. After that, Beryl Eichenberger is here. She's bringing us a really fascinating interview with Nicole Engelbrecht on her new book, Bare Bones. This is true crime, and it's super interesting. And then to wrap up the show, Twanji Kalula is here, and he's chatting to Adriana Marais about her big-selling international hit. She's a South African scientist, and she's kind of an astronaut, actually. And her book is called Out of This World and Into the Next, and she talks about life outside of Earth. And I've met her. She's kind of riveting. And that will be our show. So without further ado, I would like very much to get us started, because time waits for no man and time waits for no book. So let's get going. We're going to have a track first. This first track is called Fragiles by Charles Duplessis and Zanta Hoffmeyer. Welcome back. That was Fragile by Charles Duplessis and Zanta Hoffmeyer. And you're tuned into Book Choice, which is an hour-long show full of book reviews and author interviews. And our show is bookended by some very fine music, because this is fine music radio after all. And it's also bookmarked by our very fine sponsor, and that's Exclusive Books. And I don't know if I told you this already. My name is Paige Nick. I am the host of the show. You are in exactly the right place. In our first segment, we're going to be chatting about Jane Austen. Jane Austen, I don't know if you know this or not, has her 250th birthday coming up on the 16th of December. And other than William Shakespeare, I'm not sure there are many writers who have stood the test of time as well as Austen has. And so the world has been kicking, especially the publishing world, has been kicking into celebration mode for months already. It's been a whole year of building up to this. And I think it's only going to ramp up even more as we get towards the 16th of December. Around the world, we've seen things like Austen festivals, walking tours of her hometown, which is in Bath, big costume balls, special exhibitions at her former homes and places of importance in her life. There's also been visual history exhibitions at museums, and there have been even smaller events like guided tours, embroidery workshops. And these celebrations are all honoring the Jane Austen literary legacy through these wild and cool activities. I've seen a lot of the photographs. Often they're done in period costume. People are getting all dressed up and they are celebrating the life of Jane Austen. We are talking full Austen mania here. In fact, even here in Cape Town, I was invited to an Austen affair at the Winchester Mansions recently by publisher Jonathan Ball earlier this year. And we sipped tea and we played this game they brought out, which is Austen Bingo. If you're a big fan of Jane Austen, you need to look in your local Exclusive Books for the Austen Bingo. And we took a deep dive into some of the works that have been coming out and are coming out, all in celebration and acknowledgement of this milestone. There are and have been memoirs, reissued works with incredible new covers, resurgence of retellings, of course, and so much more. So Vanessa Levenstein is here on our show today to chat about a few of these delightful pieces that have been brought out in celebration of our very best Jane Austen. Welcome to the show, Vanessa Levenstein.
If Jane Austen's sister Cassandra was alive today, she would either have no social media presence or her settings would be on private, private, and private. Sadly for us, she destroyed most of Jane's letters, which leaves us only with those she considered unimportant. So biographers and fiction writers alike have had to dig deep to reconstruct Austen's life, which they certainly have done this year in celebration of Austen's 250th anniversary. Let's start with a classic, Jane Austen, a biography by Elizabeth Jenkins. Originally published nearly a century ago and reissued this year, Jenkins was very attached to her subject. She helped found the Jane Austen Society in 1940 and even bought Austen's home in Chawton. There's a lot to absorb in this work, so it's best read in small doses. Jenkins writes, "The highest type of creative genius owes to daily life at once everything and nothing." She goes on to compare Austen with Shakespeare in terms that both of them understood the human psyche, which translated into creating character. I do wish I'd read this book years ago, as it really is a mirror into Austen's world. Another esteemed Austen biographer, Paula Byrne, has released a novel, 6 Weeks by the Sea. But here's the thing, knowing Austen's life inside out doesn't necessarily make for great Austen-inspired fiction. The book follows the period after the Austens left their home in Steventon, the summer she supposedly fell in love. But it lacks the wit and sparkle we associate with Austen herself. Since we know Austen never married, the romantic tension in the book is missing. So to keep the reader engaged, the story needs something quite exceptional. It just didn't have it. But however, you may enjoy it. But for me, it simply wasn't a match made in Pemberley. For something lighter, there's the Jane Austen Insult Guide for Well-Bred Women by Emily Reid, a delightful little stocking filler. It's a clever compilation of Austen quotes framed in the context of modern living. How's this for a blend of Tinder and Pride and Prejudice? When you haven't swiped right in an hour, they have none of them much to recommend them. Of course, when it comes to recommending South African Austeny writers, it's 5 stars all the way. There's the wonderful book Charlotte by our own Helen Moffat. And breaking news, Vanula Dowling has written a novel still to be published that sees Jane Austen and her family through the eyes of Jane's close friend, Martha Lloyd. I've resisted hauling in the apt but overused fact universally acknowledged line. Instead, I'm simply going to finish with happy birthday, dearest Jane. Thank you for all the many years of reading pleasure.
That was Sway by Crystal Burkholz, and you're tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio, which would explain why you've just been listening to some very fine music. This is Fine Music Radio's book show. We have it every 2 weeks on a Tuesday now from 12 to 1 p.m., where we talk about what books are coming out, and we chat to a couple of authors, and we build up our to-read piles, because that's what we love to do. My name is Paige Nick. You are tuned into our show, which is built by the wonderful Mzu Makeda. And Mzu also selects all this incredible fine music that you've been listening to. So next up, after that big Jane Austen mania, we turn to another kind of mania. Richard Osmond has caused a real stir over the last decade or so with all these books he's been bringing out. He's a big personality, and he's gone from the screen to the book and back to the screen again. So, you know, when Beverly Ruiz Miller approached me to ask if she could review the latest Richard Osman title. I was kind of in two minds about it, not because the book isn't good. I haven't read it, but I see no signs. I read no reviews that ever hint that it's anything but brilliant. Mr. Osman does a fantastic job. It's just when she approached me to say she wanted to review this book, I thought we have so little time for reviews, book reviews in this world, and in the show even. An hour goes so quickly. And I wondered if Richard Osman really needs any help with sales. He will sell millions no matter what we say. And I wondered, wouldn't the time be better spent punting lesser-known authors, you know, such as myself? I mean, did I ever tell you I have a book out right now? Yep, it's called Book People. No, wait, stop that. Back to the point. I got distracted. We're going back to the Osman book. Because he is so popular already, I was really on the verge of saying no when Bev asked me if she could review it. But then Bev said something that stopped me in my tracks. She said, this book totally cheered me up. And I just thought, here we come trawling through the end of what has been a turgid year of difficulties, and it's been a rough year for many people. And don't we all just need a little cheering up as we get to the end of it? So I thought, why not? Bring it on, Bev. And also, if you do enjoy this one and if you enjoy Richard Osman, you might just love my new book, Book People. So that's enough of my punt. But it's absolutely 100% designed to cheer you up as well, just like this Richard Osman book. All right, enough of that. Over to you, Bev, and the Richard Osman.
If you enjoy popular books, belong to a book club, or watch British television programs, you'll very likely have heard of Richard Osman, the immensely tall, over 2 meters, quick-witted British television personality, who in middle age has become an international best-selling author with his Thursday Murder Club book series. And he has now begun a new series, We Solve Murders. Let me be upfront with you. I may not have read it had I not been confined to bed for a couple of days, restless for something easier to read than my usual heavy pile. Also, I'm a fan of Osman's sly witticisms on television, his quick jokes wedged in between the dialogue and what the Irish call the crack, a smart quip on the trot. This book is filled with them, so watch out, they can quite easily be missed. The high-octane plot is easily told, and really just a vehicle for these odd fellow characters, their insanely dangerous race around the world, trying to avoid being killed or trying to kill whoever. I somewhat lost the thread at some point, but didn't feel it really mattered, as they live out the kind of Netflix lives we imagine the rich and famous and criminal do, though quite possibly they don't. How would we know? The star of this book was, for me, the wonderful older woman Rosie D'Antonio, an extremely rich and world-famous author. I liked her already, of indeterminate latish age, give or take 30 years or so, who can't resist any sort of adventure or man, and who just goes for it. She thinks life should be lived to the absolute hilt, or else why bother? She's charming and quite kind, and takes a shine to her private security guard, Amy, who has a long-distance relationship with her husband and a closer connection with his father, Steve, a retired and widowed policeman who now lives sedately in the New Forest and doesn't want to go anywhere, let alone leave his cat named Trouble. You can see where this is going from quite early on, though maybe not quite how many places they will visit in one of Rosie's private jets. After Amy digs her father-in-law Steve out of his pub in England, puts his cat into good hands, and plunges into the mad world of mayhem. We spin around the world, avoiding shooters and bullets, trying to unpick who the person is who is trying to kill one of them. I forget who, I think Amy. It didn't really matter much. I just had a massively good romp reading this fantasy and wishing I were the go-to-it author, Rosie. Not for the money, although that would be nice, and also won't ever happen, but for her marvelous spirit, energy, generosity, and enviable series of lovers. I can't imagine who will play her in the movie, for there will be a movie of that, I'm sure. Meanwhile, we wait for the next volume of Osman's We Solve Murders Club, hoping that we get to hear about Trouble the Cat again. That's likely, for Osman admits his permanent companion on his writing desk is Liesel von Katt, who managed to delete an entire paragraph of the story while he was writing it. We Solve Murders is like a wonderful wedge of cake. Enjoy it and wait with anticipation for the next naughty slice.
Thank you so much for that, Bev. Riley Herbert Henry is here, and he's our newest reviewer on the show. He's joined us this year, just in his first few shows, and we're really enjoying having him on the show. He has a real literary eye. This guy loves books so much, I can tell you. He is reading his way through the entire Booker shortlist. That's commitment. And he's here now to tell us he's taken a break from the Booker shortlist to read a local South African book. It's called Hell of a Country. It's by David Cornwell. So what interests me most about this title is that it's a novel based on a true crime story. It's a creative retelling of a real story that took place in the early 1970s in South Africa, which is when I was born, so I'm kind of interested in what was going on then. And here's the thing. True crime is absolutely booming around the world, whether that's in fiction, in documentaries. And there are a couple of reasons that it may be booming, that this genre may be booming. Firstly, podcasts may have something to do with it. They're massively into true crime, and they've boomed, and they've introduced the world to a whole new way of storytelling. They take documentaries to the next level in a very intimate and immersive experience. And so I think that could be one reason why we're gravitating towards true crime right now, why it's so on trend. Or maybe there's a more sinister answer to why true crime is so popular. And the truth of the popularity of it is that there's just so much of it around, true crime, that is. And so maybe in our communities, we're trying to deal with our fears or comprehend the inexplicable things that are happening around us. So either way, no matter what makes true crime popular, we seem to be fascinated by it. And Riley is here to tell us more about this particular true crime story. Welcome to the show, Riley Herbert Henry.
In 1970s South Africa, in a fraught time of brutal control, a young woman hatches a plan so audacious, so desperate, it could only end in ruin. Hell of a Country is David Cornwell's creative reimagining of a true crime story that blends fact, fiction, and dark, twisted humour to ask what happens when obsession collides with the machinery of the apartheid state. Cornwell has a journalist's eye for detail and a novelist's ear for the absurd. In a time where cozy crime is at the forefront of the literary world, David veers hard left and takes us down a path that is gruesome and unflinchingly human, where the violence isn't just physical, but moral. The story is based on the real-life scissors murder that gripped South Africans in the early 70s and garnered many sensationalist headlines. Cornwell unpacks the story behind the story, and the result is this phenomenal book. We follow Lorraine, an 18-year-old who despises the fact that her boss and lover Andre Becker won't leave his wife to marry her instead. Then, her life changes completely when she meets Alfie Chiamoy, a recent amputee who is on the run from the law. Cornwell's prose is sparse but cinematic. His narrative voice edges seamlessly through the story, smoothly transitioning points of view, furthering the stream of consciousness nature of his writing. His writing is reminiscent of the likes of J.M. Coetzee for its unflinching look at the South African past. He also embodies the spirit of writers like Damon Gulgut, who approach topics like these with honesty and empathy. In a conversation I had with David, he said of the story, quote, "A retelling suggests the main goal is to narrate the known sequence of events, filling in gaps with imagined dialogue while staying faithful to the established facts of the case. But I wanted to do something a bit different. I wanted to use the framework of that shocking crime not just to tell a story about the individuals involved, but to explore the social pressures that shaped their actions. The novel tries to reimagine the scissors murder as a lens to examine the sickness of the society that produced such a tragedy." End quote. By fictionalizing this infamous event, he turns a lurid headline into a darkly intimate study of love, class, and the moral decay of apartheid-era suburbia. I highly recommend this book, but suggest you go in with a strong stomach. It's not gruesome in the way of a slasher story, but in its portrait of moral rot. It is more about the small, everyday cruelties that lead to catastrophe. Hell of a Country is written by David Cornwell and published by Quella Books.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. I'm not one of those who can easily hide. I don't have much money, yeah, but boy, if I did, to buy a big house where we both could live. If I was a sculptor, but then again, no, just a man who makes potions in the traveling show. Well, I know it's not much, but it's the best I can do. My gift is my song, and this one's for you. So you can tell everybody this is your song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, while you're in the world. I sat on the roof and kicked off the moss, 'cause a few of the verses, well, they got me quite cross. But the sun's been quite kind while I wrote this song. It's for people like you. Keep it turned on. So excuse me for getting, 'cause these things I do, you see, I've forgotten if they're green or they're blue. Anyway, the thing is, what I really mean is yours are the sweetest eyes that I've ever seen. This is your song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how wonderful life is while you're in the world.
That was Your Song by the Louise Howlett Quartet, and you are tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio with me, your host, Paige Nick. I'm here every second Tuesday chatting about books, and our show is punctuated by some very fine music, and our show is sponsored by Exclusive Books, because why wouldn't it be? They are the very best people for the job. If there is a book that you seek, you will find it at your local Exclusive Books, or you will find it online at Exclusive Books. And I urge you to check them out. They champion all these books with us. I also want to add that if you miss any of the segments of this show, we load the show as a podcast on fmr.co.za once the show's finished running live. So you can go back, refer to it. Maybe there was a title that you didn't catch, or an author, or maybe you want to send it to a friend and say, hey, I think you might like this. Right, so now we're heading into the second half of our show, and we have two incredible author interviews for you. And the first sticks with the true crime theme. Beryl Eichenberger is here chatting to Nicole Engelbrecht on her book, Bare Bones. So Nicole Engelbrecht, we've actually chatted about her a fair amount on the show before. I'm a bit of a fan. She runs a true crime podcast, which has spawned two books now. And this is the second one. It's called Bare Bones. This book delves into the cold cases of this phenomenally popular true crime essay podcast that she runs. It's chilling, but it's also fascinating. And over the last few shows, we've covered a few different authors and journalists who deal with these cold crimes and true crime stories. And I've become amazed and fascinated by how many of these true crimes and cold cases are solved through these journalists' tenacious work. The crimes may have gone cold many years ago, but for these journalists, their passion to solve them has never gone cold. they are hot on the heels of these cold cases. And I guess with technology what it is today, we have so much more of an opening to get in there and find out things that we wouldn't have been able to do. I mean, in the 1970s when this happened, there was no DNA testing. There was none of that. So there's so much scope here. And these stories are really shocking and riveting in equal measure. So welcome to the show, Beryl, and thank you for joining us, Nicole Engelbrecht, to chat about your book, Bare Bones.
We live with crime every day in South Africa, but when one young woman saw an opportunity of delving deeper, of helping the victims to find justice, an award-winning podcast series was born. The depth of research in true crime South Africa has led to new leads and cases being reopened, and four books. The latest is Bare Bones, and perhaps the dedication says it all. For those who live with the undefined grief of not knowing, and for those who know but have lost their voices. Desiree, Doe, Connor, Keegan, Amashle, Edna, Blanche, Leslie, Tracy, Sifisile, and Dawn. The least we can do is to continue to say your names. I asked author Nicole Engelbrecht what drew her to write this particular book.
Thank you so much, Beryl. It's a pleasure being here today. I think Bare Bones for me certainly came from my journey with the True Crime South Africa podcast and engaging, having the honor of engaging with families who've either lost members of their family to violent crime or they've gone missing and not having those answers. And that's something that's touched me most deeply about my journey over the last 6 years. And when I had the privilege of being able to start writing books, I wanted to really give that aspect of it a new audience.
Why did you choose these 10 missing persons specifically? I mean, there are so many, aren't there?
Of course.
The statistics are what, 10% solved crimes?
Correct. 10% solved murders, sadly, yes. So I think my thought process in selecting these specific cases were, of course, they were all covered on the podcast. There had been developments that had happened after the podcast had aired, often as a result of the podcast. And that was quite important for me to sort of show that these formats, these new formats of podcasts and these amazing platforms can have real-world good effects. And I specifically chose these 10, I think, because they displayed a wide range of South Africans, different families, different circumstances, and then also a wide range of SAPS engagements on the cases, whether it's positive or negative.
Yes, I suppose we should talk perhaps a little bit about the negative, and yet there is a lot of negative, and we know that, and you are very upfront with it in the book. But at the same time, there are some positive outcomes, aren't there?
Absolutely.
And the power of the podcast in leading to closing those cases, because many of these cases are more than 20 years old.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about what comes out of the podcast.
Sure. I must say that I was very surprised when it first happened. And really, it's all started with, the first unsolved missing persons case, just a very simple lead of someone who thought they had spotted the person. And from there, it sort of snowballed. And I will now often get, sometimes it'll just be people reaching out to say that they knew the individual or they knew something of the individual at the time. But we've had all the way up to major leads coming in about people who have been told that, one of their friends had alleged they'd committed the crime. And a 25-year-old cold case that has been opened as a result of that. And I think for the families as well, it's just been a way to give them a little bit more hope in what has been for many a very hopeless journey.
There's a lot of media attention on some cases, but not on every case. What is it that creates the media attraction in general?
Sure. So I think this is something that I've figured out over the years is that there are definitely across the world types of cases that get more media attention than others. And very often the basis of that is sometimes race, sometimes where the person lives, socioeconomic circumstances, a wide range of things. If a person's lived quite a high-risk lifestyle, they tend not to get as much media attention. If there's been substance abuse or sex work, for instance, And that is something not just happening in South Africa, it's across the world. And of course, the media can't cover every single case. But there is a very clear if I look at all the cases, it is very clear to me that certain victims get more coverage than others. And that's something I've tried to change with True Crime South Africa, in trying to give those what I call invisible victims a voice on a platform.
Were there cases that you chose in the book that touched you particularly? Or did you choose them because they touched you particularly?
I think every single one did, but there have been some that have stuck with me more than others. I think one is certainly Connor Isaacs, who was a 15-year-old boy who was murdered in the Western Cape in 2019. His case remains unsolved. And that case, certainly having met his parents face to face, that was my first experience of that. Definitely one of the cases that stayed with me. And then Desiree Reed as well, who is a young lady who's been missing for now 25 years. And I've become quite close with her family, and we've been able to do some amazing things in the world of missing people together. And that's, both of those cases are certainly ones that will live on in my mind for a very long time.
And are some of them being pursued now as a result of the exposure on the podcast?
Yes, absolutely. So certainly one of the cases I discuss in the podcast, in the book as well, which was a murder which occurred in George in 2000. That case was never really actively investigated. It was quite a dead-end case. And that is now open and being investigated for the first time in 25 years as a result of information that came in from the podcast.
And the last question, is South Africa at a tipping point with crime?
I certainly think so. I think that we are in a place where our police could go sort of north or south, and we as South Africans need to continue to hold our police accountable while simultaneously understanding the difficult circumstances that they're working under. They are desperately under-resourced. So I think we are at a tipping point of a kind. And I think it's up to all South Africans which way it goes.
Mm-hmm. Nicole Engelbrecht, thank you so much for this book, Bare Bones, which is published by Jonathan Ball and is a very fascinating read.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Ntilo Ntilo by the Soweto String Quartet, and you are tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio. And I'm your host. My name, as always, is Paige Nick. I'm always here talking about books. It's one of my very favorite subjects. And the show is sponsored by Exclusive Books, our friends with all the branches around the country where you can get whatever you want to read. All of these titles will appear on their shelves. And so now we're into our very last segment of the show, and as we wrap it up, Twanji Kalula is here chatting to Adriana Marais, or rather, I think she's Dr. Adriana Marais, if I'm not wrong. And Twanji is chatting to her about her book, which is called Out of This World and Into the Next. I was lucky enough to meet Adriana Marais, the author of this book, at the recent Open Book Festival. And I got to tell you, listening to her speak made my jaw drop. And she said the reason she wrote this book was that she'd given these talks so many times and people were still so fascinated by them that she decided to put them down in writing, put all these observations and all these discoveries into writing, and that's where the book came from. And it's been published in a number of countries worldwide. Adriana Marais writes about the possibility of living outside of our planet, a subject that is growing in interest in life, but also in interest. Just look at the Booker Prize, won recently by Samantha Harvey, who wrote a book called Orbital, which I've read, which is astonishing. It's set on a spaceship that's orbiting Earth. But that was fiction. This that Twanji's chatting to Adriana Marais about, and it's all true, and it's all everything we could ever imagine about space and everything we know about space. So welcome to the show, Twanji and Adriana.
Humans have been fascinated by space for centuries, and we can see that in our literature. The fact that Orbital won the Booker Prize shows that we are still drawn to ideas of what's possible beyond our ozone layer. If you're a dollar billionaire or a pop star like Katy Perry, you may even be able to leave the Earth for a few minutes as you ponder the possibility. Someone who has dedicated her entire career to understanding what could be possible in space is Dr. Adriana Marais. Her new book delves into how life emerged on Earth and how human civilization could soon begin expanding beyond our home planet. Now, like most children, space was a huge part of my childhood. I was fascinated by things like planets, stars, aliens, and dinosaurs. And I think it speaks to that idea that it's like it stimulates our imagination, right? And what the possibilities that beyond. But most of us lose that enthusiasm as we get older. It wanes. But you were stuck there. You grew to love space and you're obsessed with it. Can you tell me how you were introduced to it and why it's kept your interest?
Thanks, Twanji. A pleasure to be here with you. I guess what you're saying is I didn't grow up. So,
which is not a
second,
bad thing.
I second that observation. Yeah, I think studies have shown that space and dinosaurs, as you've pointed out, are the topics that children are curious about. And yeah, some of us adults turn those into careers. Yeah, in my book, the dinosaurs even do feature at some point. I speak about the resilience of humans through the eras. Mm. And how as modern humans, we haven't even seen the kind of climate shifts that our ancestors did and not only saw but survived, namely super volcano eruptions, asteroid impacts, resulting ice ages and massive climatic shifts, the likes of which we haven't seen in modern history, are exactly what our ancestors lived through and in the end thrived off. So I suppose one of my arguments is that we've got to keep exploring, to keep on our toes, as it were, to deal with changes in the environment. And what better way to do that than to go purposefully into extreme environments and learn how to survive those, bring back the tools, bring back the knowledge so that we can be prepared for the inevitable environmental changes that come our way, whether these are self-induced in this current era, or perhaps from afar. You know, we've heard about this asteroid that popped up last weekend, was it? Let's see how that goes. But this is always a possibility that something from space finds us rather than the other way around.
And I think it's quite a fascinating book in the sense that you set out to achieve two things. I think the one thing is obviously there's an educational element of just, you know, it was kind of a big kind of space 101 kind of part to it. But then a huge part of it is about provoking our thoughts around what's possible. How did the book actually come about and what were you actually aiming to achieve?
Yeah, thanks so much. I think the book was, written in my mind. I thought if the apocalypse happens and the internet fails, the book could serve as some kind of reference for like a brief account of the history of space exploration. So people can remember what we did. You know, it's always possible that things go badly wrong. I mean, a lot of it, I wrote this during COVID and the lockdown. So this like apocalyptic air was around after 2019. I did a lot of writing during the lockdown. Mm. Yeah, as a child, I've always loved exploring. So I think I always look where the boundary is and then try and push it, as my parents and teachers would probably agree. So space is just the natural extension of the exploration that we can do here on Earth, the next realm. Yeah, it's become a career, and I think this is an interesting point in the history of life on Earth. So life, according to evidence we found, emerged on Earth around 4 billion years ago. Yeah. So it's taken 4 billion years for those microscopic life forms to evolve into plants, animals, humans. And now finally humans, this unusual species that we are part of, have developed the capability to leave the planet, which we did in the 60s and 70s. Of course, we do have astronauts living in Earth orbit for over 20 years now continuously. But, you know, if going to space for a few minutes or orbiting the Earth is useful. But the real adventure, in my opinion, starts when you go somewhere, right? Yeah. So the moon as a destination and Mars as a destination is what really fascinates me.
And I wanted to ask you about that. I think our producer, Zoo, knows very well that I'm often guilty of saying, I need to leave this planet. Especially when we're discussing the headlines in the newspapers.
Careful you say that around.
So I was fascinated to read that you truly believe that it is a possibility. Possibility and that we could live elsewhere. How soon or how far away do you think that is? And how realistic do you think that is?
So there are 8 billion plus of us humans living on the surface of this planet currently, and so many of us live in extremely harsh conditions. Mm. When we look at the conflict that's broken out, the drought-induced refugee situations, there are so many humans who live in circumstances that many of us would find, in theory, unbearable. Mm. However, human resilience kicks in, and we are able to withstand extreme conditions. So I see great parallels between improving living conditions on Earth with, you know, trying to create societies in extreme places beyond Earth. Mm. The kinds of technological solutions to produce power, clean water, food, communication systems remain necessary for humans in whatever planet or whatever scenario we find ourselves in. So when we look at practical examples, you know, we have people living in Antarctica over the winter. South Africa has a base there. We've got astronauts in the International Space Station and in the Chinese Space Station living in the vacuum of space. So actually, when you are on Mars, things will get easier, if you can imagine it, because there is H2O ice crystals in the sand. There's carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and these are resources. These are elements that you can use to produce necessary resources for life, water, oxygen, hydrogen for fuel, etc. So we already have the technology to live on the surface of Mars. Getting there, we need to sophisticate. We've, of course, taken technology to Mars. That's how we get this beautiful, like, high-resolution footage of the surface of Mars, which makes us feel like we are already there. So getting there is a challenge that Elon Musk and SpaceX and China and various other parties with large budgets are developing. So we are waiting, hopefully, for the successful demonstration of the size of rocket necessary to transport the size of cargo that humans will require. This is one missing element. But once we arrive there, we can take the learnings from decades of living in the space stations that we've had in orbit. Of course, living on the moon, which is in the plans for the next few years, will also give us important information on how to eventually live on our next-door neighbor planet, Mars. But essentially, we have the technology. We need imagination, some trial and error, integration is important, and then demonstration. And this could happen in the next few years.
And one of the things that really piqued my interest as I read the book was that you explore the notion of living beyond Earth, and the fact that it gives us an opportunity to kind of introspect about how we live currently. And use the word stewardship, you know, like as stewards of our planets. And you know, I couldn't help myself thinking, okay, we've destroyed one planet, we're off to go and do it to another. But you actually say that you think it's a great opportunity to kind of reflect on how we live. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Sure. So the first major difference, if you are an alien looking at Earth and Mars, is that Earth is abundant with life. Earth is teeming with life. You know, a drop of seawater contains like so many different living systems. The air we're breathing right now full of fungal spores and other things. So Earth's teeming with life. Mars, we can't detect life. We have tried. Maybe there's life there, but our instruments have not been able to detect it. So the first difference is that maybe we deserve to live on Mars, a barren, desolate place where we have to build everything from scratch. You know, that's kind of a joke,
okay. Think about what we've done
to Earth. Exactly. So a deeper appreciation for life, because I think the heart of what we could be working towards here on Earth is a deeper sense of appreciation for life. Let's remember that Earth is the only planet we know of with life on it currently. That Earth is the only planet we know of with liquid water on the surface. And yet we pollute these oceans and kill these life forms that make our own existence possible. When we have the opportunity to try to build a biosphere elsewhere, we will realize just how complex and beautiful our planet Earth is, I believe. And that doesn't mean all of us need to go to Mars.
Absolutely.
Some of us are happy to stay here. Others of us are rearing to go. So that will be a natural division where some of us may choose to go and explore Mars. Most of us will stay here. But I think seeing how difficult it is to set up a biosphere, you need bacteria, you need fungal spores, you need seeds, you need the insects to, you know, pollinate these plants that we're growing. You need the humans, not only the humans, you need the engineers, the medics, the mediators, the artists, the psychologists, the beer brewers. You need all of these people to make a society that works. And perhaps by reflecting on what kind of culture we would like to inculcate or have emerge in this community, then we can start to think about what direction we want to go on Earth. And I think this has been missing from the dialogue that we're having here. We can all point out what the problems are, but what we really need to do is start working towards what is our vision for the future? What culture do we want to aspire towards? Because if each one of us thinks about that consciously every day, what culture are we aspiring towards? Then I think we start to make real progress.
I just wanted to commend you as well, and first of all, writing such an accessible book about space. It really is very complex and complicated, but you managed to get me excited about chemistry and social issues, and it managed to be thought-provoking. And I think the real success of this book is that it does spark a little bit of imagination in the readers. Out of This World and Into the Next by Dr. Adriana Murray was published by Profile Books and retails for 360 Rand.
Thank you so much. To Infinity and Beyond is a great way for me, I think, to wrap up this show today. The fact that books take us not only to other countries, but to other worlds and other planets even, is testament to how important they are. If you find yourself scrolling a lot, watching a lot of videos, and you keep telling yourself you'd like to read some more, hopefully something in the show has spoken to you and you'll pick up a book and fall in love with reading all over again, or be reminded of an author that you really enjoy or a subject matter that you really enjoy. I find when I listen to people talking about books, the one thing it really does is make me want to read. So there's no shortage. Pop to your local Exclusive Books and hopefully something will talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to thank all our reviewers and interviewers. They work tirelessly behind the scenes, picking what they want to read and what they want to talk about. And I was chatting to a reviewer, one of our lovely reviewers, Shirley Gula, the other day, and she was saying, I read for pleasure. We all do this. We get so much pleasure out of this job, and we are so lucky to do it. And so I want to thank you all listeners. You give us such a pleasure to be able to talk about our greatest pleasure, and we hope we give you some pleasure and some ideas of what to read. And thank you, Mzu, and thank you all the publishers, and thank you all the authors, and thank you, Fine Music Radio, for having us. We'll see you again in 2 weeks' time, and until then, happy reading. Thank you.
Thank you.